It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
United States Marine Band.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. So I just thought I'd get a little, background music going, provided by one of our sponsors, Alexa. And sometimes I have to be careful when I say her name because it's every time you say the word Alexa, it'll wake her up. But there's a mute button on the Echo Dot, which is what I'm using right now. But anyway, that's not important. Why I love the 4th of July, what it represents to me. I wanted to talk about that since we just concluded the 4th of July holidays. Kind of thinking about it, and really, the 4th of July is about freedom and independence. But that's kind of like the subtitle. To me, the 4th of July is about doing the impossible, right? That's really what we celebrate, in my opinion. When we celebrate the 4th of July, we are celebrating doing the impossible. You know, you have, at that time, the world's biggest army, the world's biggest navy. This, you know, at Britain, at this point in time, I believe they controlled 70% of the world. And here's this ragtag team of colonists who decide, hey, I don't want to be part of Britain anymore. We're going to break off. Say what? Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And they're, you know, first of all, everybody in Britain says, no, they're not going to do that. It's impossible. They'd be crazy. And then when they realize that, hey, that's exactly what's going to happen, then they said, oh, this is going to be easy. We're just going to crush these guys. That wasn't the case either. But on the other side, you know, you had these courageous leaders who, again, they knew they were outmanned and outgunned, right? And they said, it doesn't matter. We believe in this cause so much that we're going to overcome all of these, quote, issues, right? That we're going to overcome all of these setbacks. And we're just going to do with what we have. So you wonder why, as people, as Americans, but also as a people, why we love movies like Star Wars, or, you know, those great stories that celebrate the underdog. Because our whole country was founded on being an underdog, right? So, yes, we celebrate freedom. Yes, we celebrate independence. But we also are celebrating the impossible. America was built by doing the impossible, by breaking the rules, breaking the laws, and not worried about fairness, not necessarily about fairness. What's fair wasn't part of the picture. What's easy wasn't part of the picture. And they accomplish greatness because they did the impossible. Anyway, that's kind of my take on why I love the 4th of July. Certainly, would be open to your thoughts. Give me your opinions, why you think the 4th of July is special. And maybe you're one of our international listeners, and maybe you don't celebrate the 4th of July, but I'm sure you celebrate some kind of independence, some kind of freedom in your country. And anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. All right, so let's get the party started with our first guest, Sharon Bolt. Sharon Bolt is a publicity expert, founder of Get Free Publicity Today. She has been a business owner and entrepreneur for over 16 years. Sharon's business have included complementary therapies and dog training during the last 10 years. She has contributed more than 40 different local and national. She has contributed to more than 40 different local and national newspapers, magazines, television, radio shows, and she has received over 1.5 million pounds in free, or $2 million roughly, in free publicity and free advertising. She's also the co-author of two highly acclaimed books called Successful Women in Business and Every Entrepreneur's Guide, Running Your Own Business. I love that. It's amazingly essential, right? Sharon Bolt, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hello, Bert. Lovely to speak to you again.
Good to have you back. It's always good to have you back. And I wanted to jump into this and really pivot off one of your books, Every Entrepreneur's Guide, Running Your Own Business, an acclaimed book, a bestseller. Let's talk about this. And I wanted to get your thoughts on some of the mistakes that you see entrepreneurs make when running their business, maybe the top two or the top three mistakes that you see a lot of entrepreneurs make.
I think the number one thing that I see, Bert, is that when small business owners and entrepreneurs, people don't seem to think that they should include PR in their marketing strategy. You know, we're looking at maybe Facebook ads and direct marketing and putting an ad in the locals and things like that. But rarely do they actually include PR in their campaigns anywhere.
All right, so let me ask you this, because I could just hear this, people asking, well, yeah, you know, Sharon, I'd love to include PR, but isn't PR hard?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, and I think you've hit the nail on the head right there, Bert, isn't it? Because people think they don't know where to start or what to do, and I think that's what it is. That's what it boils down to. People, certainly when we're starting out, we've heard of PR. You know, we see it on the TV. We even see our competitors and read about our competitors, and we think, I'd love to be able to do that, but I don't know where to start. And often, you know, to go to a PR company, you'll end up spending thousands of dollars a month, and there's no guaranteed publicity with that. So I think you're absolutely right. People don't know where to start and what to do. And, you know, I'm here to tell people you can do it yourself. You're the best people. You as the business owner, the best person to get your own publicity. And it really, really isn't very difficult to do. And I'm more than happy to share some tips on how to do that today.
Why don't we get started with that? So where should I start? Let's get started, or let's get going with that idea, because I think you're right. Most people don't know what to do first, so why don't you help us out?
Yeah, I think that the thing to do is, one of the things that I did when I first started getting publicity, and I didn't know all the ins and outs of how to go about it, and what I did is I just responded to what was currently going on. So this is known as newsjacking or piggybacking off the news. So I'll give you an example of how this might work, but when it was, I suppose, a year or so ago now, we had the big news hit the world, didn't we? It was Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, they split up. And whether you're a lover or not of, you know, that type of thing, it was worldwide news. Now, with that, it brought with it numerous opportunities for different types of business owners to get publicity. So I'll give you an example of what I mean here. If you're a parenting expert at that time, you could then go to the press or the media and come up with a story idea such as how to make sure your child doesn't think a divorce is their fault. Because obviously there was children involved. So there's a great angle straight away with this news story if you're a parenting expert. But let's say you're a divorce lawyer. Now, the same story, but you could come up with a story idea such as 7 steps to getting the best settlement from a divorce and still remaining friends. And likewise, if you're a marriage or a relationship expert, again, from this same story, you could come up with a story idea such as 5 sure signs that your marriage is heading for divorce. Now, this type of story angle is current at that time by the media. They are looking for stories from different business experts who they can then feature and include this type of story in the press and in the national press and media.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because I love the example of using, you know, Brad Pitt and Angela Jolie there. So could you, or is it taboo to say, hey, don't let your marriage end up like Brad and Angela's? Could you jacket that much?
You could. I would, you know, sometimes in the headline, you would put something like story ideas so that the journalist that you're sending the pitch to or the press release to will know straight away, because they get hundreds sometimes of emails a day, particularly if it's a national publication or a national radio or TV station. So if you put in the headline straight away, story idea, and then you could put... You could put and mention Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. You don't have to, because it's current. It's in everybody's mind. Mm. That's when the media are looking for like stories that they can run off in order to, because it's newsworthy, it's current. So they will no doubt link up to that what was going on. And yes, you can make reference to it. But because it's so current and relevant to the news right then, it's just easy for you to do.
Right, right. Yeah, you don't have to, what do you call it, you don't have to go overboard with it. And what's nice about this, and again, I'm going to explore this example a little bit further, because, you know, every day in the news there's something that somebody can probably use, especially if they can be a little creative. I think that... sometimes the media looks for maybe a creative angle. What do you think about that? Are the news looking for something creative, something to be outlandish with, or does it depend on the outlet?
Yes, I mean, you're right what you say. It is about getting creative. It's about looking what's going on currently. I mean, that's just one type of thing that you can get media exposure for. Just another example is like what's called an evergreen event. So this is something that happens every year without fail, such as July the 4th, Independence Day.
Mm.
And, you know, what's celebrationary in your particular business that you can link in with July the 4th, because that's when the media are looking for these types of stories to run with.
Well, I like that. Yeah, absolutely. You know, cold and flu season is something that happens, what do you call it? They talk about it every year, right? So this is something that you could do. And even if you're a restaurant, you could create the, you know, cold and flu diet or cold and flu recipe, or you could come out with, you know, XYZ restaurant has a cold and flu soup or cold and flu lunch to help you avoid the, you know, help you boost your immune system, you know, and give you a high protein lunch or whatever it is. So anybody can really use these evergreen events.
That's right, and that was a great example, Bert, that you gave there. I mean, that's exactly it. That's how to get creative. It's also about knowing your market and what's going on in your niche. So, for example, I've done, as you explained, I did a lot of dog training. And so some of the statistics with dogs is that when it comes to summertime and when it comes to Christmas time, that is when so many people go and get a puppy. They are the most popular times every year that people go out and buy puppies. So every summer and every coming up to the Christmas time, so I usually send out a press release or a pitch at the end of November, early December, all about what to look for to get your ideal puppy. And also something like, you know, that, you know, puppy owners, again, this is knowing your niche and your market of what your audience, the questions they want answered. So, for example, in the dog training world, the number one thing that people have a problem with when they get a puppy is the house training, the toileting. And so, you know, you come from an angle with that, saying how to get your puppy toilet trained in three easy steps, for example. So it's about knowing your niche, about what type of questions your target market are asking you, and then coming up with something that's current and timely, and you are ticking everybody's boxes now.
Okay, so let's talk about this. You send something out to the media outlet, and do you suggest starting nationally first, start local? What's my first step or on that level?
I think it really is really down to the individual. With my story, Bert, when I got exposure for the first time, I just went for national radio. And at the time, what was interesting, I had my complementary therapy practice. So I was working with alternative therapies and fixing people with bad backs and skin conditions and migraines. And I just recently got these two puppies. And I was told it was the worst case scenario and that I'd have to rehome one and they would fight for the top dog position. And it was just an awful picture that was painted. So I was on a mission to find a way that my puppies would understand and so that I could keep them. And then after I started to just focus on how they were communicating and how I could stop that awful scenario from happening, and I was starting to do really well with my own dogs, and I started to include this type of dog training into my therapy clients too. And then at the time, I heard on national radio, which is Radio 2 in the UK, it was the drive time slot, so one of the most listened to slots, they were going to feature about dog behavior, and they were going to get an expert on the phone. And in fact, to come into the studio. And it took actually three emails that I sent, and I explained and I made it all about what I could do for them and their show, how I could entertain and educate their audience. I didn't make it anything about me. And I said I had lots to share because I believed that I did. And yes, it was 4 or 5 days later, I was sitting in the studio introduced as a dog training expert speaking to 4 million listeners.
Well, I love it. Okay, so let's break this down. You know, first of all, we talked today about news jacking or piggybacking on whatever's happening in the news. And it could be business related, it could be relationship related. Really, you could take any event, and if with a little creativity, you could twist it in something that might be able to help you. And then you send an email out to your prospective outlet, and did you follow up with phone calls or did you just follow up with emails?
You can do both, and you can even if you can get the number and you are good at making phone calls, you feel comfortable about pitching on the phone, then ringing up the journalist can be a really good thing to do. Most people don't like to do that, so yes, email is the easy route, and a lot of journalists like the email effect, but of course, they're busy people, so you've got to stand out. But the crucial thing really to tell people that's listening in here, Bert, is that you need to find the right journalist who features and reports or talks about your particular story angle that you're pitching. So, for example, if you're a dentist and you come up with this great story idea about 5 natural ways to get your teeth white, you know, great, great story idea. There's so many people that would love to know that. But if you then pitch it to a journalist who talks and writes about social media marketing, then they're not going to be interested. So you have to look for your niche journalists who are interested in the type of story ideas and topics that you are pitching and sending a press release about.
Yeah, I like that. Good stuff there. So, you know, you come up with a topic, you can send it out via email, you can follow up by email and phone call, and something that is so critically important. Make sure that you are pitching the right type of editor or journalist to make sure that it makes sense. So again, don't be pitching a business editor your idea about a relationship topic. And then something that I want to emphasize here, something that you pointed out, and that is that you basically honed in on what you could do for their audience, how you could serve their audience. The pitch wasn't about you. It was about them and their audience. And that is so critically important, correct?
That's absolutely right. And I know it sounds funny, but do you know what? Journalists, they are not interested in us. They really are.
I know.
They've got a job to do. They've got an audience to entertain and educate. So you have to make it all about them and not about you, which was great for me because when I first got my first media exposure on national radio, it wasn't my selling point. I didn't have a dog training business. I didn't have a dog training website. So, I mean, it wasn't of any benefit for me either. But do you know what? The funny thing is they never asked me at all. They interviewed over on the phone. They just checked what I was going to talk about and where I was coming from. But they never asked me how long I was in business for, how long I'd done the dog training business for. They didn't ask me. I would not have lied if they had asked me, but I was not going to give that information because it wasn't beneficial to me. But they didn't ask, and I've been on national radios, I've been on national TV stations, national magazines and newspapers, and no one has ever asked me my credentials.
I love it. What a great tip there. Sharon Bolt, thank you so much for stopping by. If somebody wants to find out more about you and your books or your services, where can they go?
Well, I've got a free report that people can get. They can sign up for. It's called How to Write an Attention-Grabbing Press Release that Creates Win-Win Situations with the Media. And if they go to my website, which is getfreepublicitytoday.com, they can sign up and get it straight away.
Getfreepublicitytoday.com. Getfreepublicitytoday.com. Sharon Bolt, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Good stuff there from publicity expert Sharon Bolt. A lot of good stuff there. And we're going to continue with our nuggets of information here. My next guest, Jason Drone. Jason Drone has been online, marketing online for 8 years, working with literally thousands of entrepreneurs through his courses and done-for-you services. He is best known for his quickest path to cash strategies, where he cuts years of testing and development out of his clients' lives. He delivers sales funnels that are both automated and profitable. Jason Drone, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thanks so much, Brett. How are you?
Good, man. Good to have you here right after the 4th. Did you have a good 4th?
I did. I think I work every day. So, and we watched fireworks a little bit. They kind of came up over the trees, but yeah, when you have a 2.5-year-old, it's difficult, you know, getting out that late. So.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is. all right, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about content marketing, because I want to talk about and you correct me if I'm wrong. I think you and I talked about you have a piece of software that you create that can help people create content.
Yeah.
Is that correct? All right. So let's talk about this, because I think this is so crucial, because most people understand they got to put content out there. But when you start talking to them about putting content out there, they just roll their eyes because it's so overwhelming.
Yeah, it is. Well, and content is so weird, really. I mean, content is anything and everything that that somebody reads, watches, consumes. You know what I mean? So
right.
It's like, well, you know, what kind of content should I put out? You know, then the correct answer to that is anything that is going to convert a reader to a buyer or traffic to buyers, you know, traffic to customers. So it's challenging because, you know, you need a lot of it. You need a lot of it quickly, and it needs to work. You know, it needs to have the intended effect. So a lot of people that I talk to, it's like, well, content, you know, I don't like writing, or I don't like you know, being in front of a video camera, or I don't know how to do video editing, or you know, and all of that is content, but there's always some challenge that kind of, you know, creeps up as it relates to content marketing. And at the end of the day, it's more important to get something out there than it is for it to be perfect. You know, so whether it's an email to your list, or whether it's a blog post, whether it's a YouTube video, you know, just getting something out there is often 90% of the battle, because, you know, people build incredible audiences from their podcasts and their YouTube channels from imperfect, non-professional content. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. I want everybody to think about, you know, maybe a favorite YouTube video. Most of those, you know, YouTube videos that have gone viral are not, quote, professional, right? They're engaging,
yeah.
They're funny, they're stimulating, they're inspiring, but they're not professional. And so I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, they aren't. They aren't professional, you know, and at the end of the day, it's really just about, you know, having a voice. It's more about the message than it is about the thing. Like I, you know, listen to podcasts. Most podcasts are done, you know, somebody's home computer sitting in their office, you know, or whatever. It might be an interview done on Skype. You know, there's lots of different ways, you know, that the content takes shape, but at the end of the day, it's not a professional thing. You know, it's not like, you know, you're going out and paying some, you know, video agency to capture 3 minutes of video, edit it up, and put it on YouTube for you. It's not a commercial, you know, and people aren't looking for commercials. People are looking to bond with the business owner, you know, in whichever way that may be, but they're looking to learn more about a brand or learn more about a company or whatever, and content is how you do that. So,
and something I want to bring up is that you could take one piece of content and repurpose it. So you mentioned a podcast. Let's say that you do a podcast, and a podcast could be, like you said, something like this, or it could be you doing a monologue, and then you could take that podcast and transcribe it, and then you could take that podcast and make it into a video. You could either do a talking video, or you could do a slideshow video of what you just wrote about or what you podcasted about. So it's got both the voice and the text, or the audio and the text. So it's just about kind of really being creative.
Right. Yeah. And that's actually one of my favorite ways to create content is video. You know, so video is easy, depending on the tools, but video for the most part is easy to capture. And the video ends up, people can watch the video. Of course, you can transcribe it. From the transcription, you can create blog posts, you can create books, you know, I have two books that are about to, I need to do the very final edit on them, and they're going to be released here probably in the next couple months or so, but those books started as video courses. So it was a video course, and then the transcription or the transcriber went through and wrote them all out, and then an editor went through and, you know, made it, updated the content a little bit and made it a little bit more relevant. But now it's, you know, one of them is a 300 page book all about sales funnel conversion.
Wow. That is cool. That's a
content.
Great way of doing it.
Yeah. Based on probably, you know, there was probably 15 or 20 good, long 1,500 word blog posts. There was a couple like lead magnets, you know, little PDF reports that I gave away over the years. There was, you know, just a bunch of content in some form that we just kind of mashed up into what is now a book. And it took a little bit of doing, but the content was already created, you know, so I didn't need to even rethink about the content in order to get the book done. All I needed to do was kind of just, you know, collate it.
Sure, sure. All right. So what is the name of the software that will, let's talk about this and what does it do?
Yeah, so we have a piece of software called Curately. Curately.org is the URL. And what it is it's a content curation software. Will let you scan the internet for articles, videos, you know, things that are related to your niche. So basically you go in and you search you search for woodworking or you search for dog training or whatever, and it goes out and it finds a bunch of articles that you can kind of mix and mash up into your own blog post. So it takes writing a 4, 5, 6 hour, you know, long blog post, a good meaty 1,000-word post, it takes and condenses that down to about 10 minutes. So really you're just curating the internet's content as opposed to needing to come up and brainstorm your own. There's a lot of different ways to use it. You know, some of the inspiration was really from Pinterest. Like you would see these long articles and it would be like 37 things to do with 2x4s. You know, like I'm a woodworker, so I have a lot of woodworking references. But so 37 things to do with 2x4s. And when you're looking at the article, every single one of those 37 things are actually it's a separate blog post written by somebody else. But the thing is the person getting all of the traffic is the one who has that list post that is getting shared thousands of times in Pinterest. So that was.
So I want to back up a little bit here and kind of emphasize this a little bit and clarify this. So this person didn't sit here and take those 37 things you can do with 2x4s and rewrite it. He didn't rip anybody off either. It sounds to me like he just. He aggregated or he just got all 37, you know, whatever, and created one big blog post. And now instead of having a consumer go to 37 different articles or 37 different sites, they can go to one place and find all 37 listed there. And then the contribution or the credit is obviously to the author who wrote that. But this person...
Yep.
Just put it all together.
Yep, they're the gateway to those 37 articles. Of course, somebody could do a Google search and go up and find those 37 articles with a lot of painstaking labor, you know. But this person, you know, the woodworker site, the one who has that article, I mean, their Pinterest traffic's coming to his site. Then they're going from his site. They're clicking around a little bit, reading his stuff. Maybe you're reading some different articles or whatever. Some of them are clicking links, you know, in his list to go look at a 2x4 bench that was put together or whatever. But he is the one who was controlling all the traffic.
All right. So let's talk about this real quick. The name of the the name of the product again is Curately. Say it again, because my English is wearing thank you. Curately.org.
Yep.
And so it will go out there, and as you mentioned, you can put in some keywords. Is that right? And it will go out there and amass this content, and then you can do exactly like that example of the 37 things to do with a 2x4.
Yeah, and you can go through and tag, like, let's say you can go through and tag article, like give it a tag of 2x4 so that, you know, tomorrow you come back and you're ready to write the 2x4 blog post, and you can just search by tag and you can see all the 2x4 blog posts. So
I love
it. It really is really powerful for searching and sifting through content in order to become a more effective content marketer.
Okay, so let's say that I do something exactly like that. 37 things to do when starting a business. 37, you know, whatever it is. 37 things to do with 2x4s, or 37 things to create YouTube traffic. Then how do I now take this traffic and use it to build my business?
So what I would do, there's a couple different things you can do. I mean, once that blog post is up on your website, you can put an opt-in box in the sidebar of the site. You can include links off to your own products or your own lead magnets or whatever within the body. Those are called native ads. Basically, it's like an in-post text link or an in-post banner that redirects a reader somewhere you want them to go. So the content is the reason they're on the site. It's how they found you. And if they, you know, read down to the end of the blog post, then it's reasonably, you know, it's assumed that they're interested in 2x4s or 2x4 woodworking or woodworking in general or whatever. So maybe you get them to subscribe to your woodworking newsletter, or you get them to describe or subscribe for your 10 free woodworking plans or whatever. So you're building your list from the traffic that is coming into that site.
I love it. I love it. And this is, and I like the two examples that you gave there. So you got this traffic coming in, you can put in some ads to promote yourself or one of your products, or as well as putting in an opt-in box.
Yeah, opt-in box. You can not collect email leads, and you can promote CPA offers or affiliate offers. I mean, you know, once you have traffic, then the rest of it is pretty easy to figure out. You know, but without the traffic, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I love that. With the traffic, you can figure out the rest. It's just like cash flow, right? Once the cash is coming in, you can figure out what to do with it. Same thing with traffic. Again, you can go to Curately. It's CURATELY.org and check it out there. And if you go there now, you can get 14 days for free at Curately.org. I don't know why it's giving me such a tough time. But anyway, Jason, thank you so much for stopping by. As always, it's a lot of fun to have you here, and I always learn something new.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
All righty. Good stuff there. And again, don't hesitate to check out Jason's software, Curately, CURATELY.org. You get a free trial. You can check it out. And if anybody here is trying to write an article, you know that one simple article could take you 3 or 4 hours. And I love the example. He basically, you know, the example that he gave, that this person in the woodworking niche put together this really large article using, you know, what you would call an aggregated or, you know, just accumulating all these different posts. Instead of spending, you know, hours trying to find those 37 posts, you can use a software like Curately and probably get it done in what, an hour, maybe less, 20, 30 minutes once you get to proficient with it. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be right back with right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Patrick Bet-David. And Alexa, tell us a little bit about Patrick Bet-David. Alexa, who is Patrick Bet-David?
Patrick Bet-David is an American entrepreneur and financial advisor.
An American entrepreneur and financial advisor, and he's also a successful startup entrepreneur, CEO of PHP Agency. He's an emerging author and creator of Valuetainment on YouTube. And Valuetainment on YouTube, you can either go to YouTube and you can put in Valuetainment, or you can put in Patrick Bet-David, and you'll find him. He probably has the largest, most popular YouTube channel for entrepreneurs. And again, it's Valuetainment on YouTube. Patrick Bet-David, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Good to be on with you, Bert.
Hey, it's good to have you here. And you know what? I'm really, really excited and also amazed. Your channel on YouTube, Valuetainment, has a massive amount of subscribers. And it just so happens today we've been talking a lot about content creation and content marketing. So talk a little bit about your channel. When did you get started, and when did you start accumulating? How long did it take you to start accumulating the large subscribers that you have?
Yeah, so, you know, my background, I was, when I got out of the military, I was with financial industry with Morgan Stanley Dean Witter, and then I went to Transamerica. Then we started PHP in October of 2009, and one day I said, I'm going to start making videos for our advisors, for our agents. And that was in November of 2012. And so we were late to YouTube. We were late to everything pretty much with social media. And I did a video a week. It was called 2 Minutes with Pat at that time. And then we increased it to 2 videos a week the second year. And I think 2.5 years into it, we had maybe 1,500 subscribers at that time, maybe 1,500 subscribers. And then we went from there to crossing over 100,000 subscribers last October, which is a few months ago. And then we crossed a 250,000 6 weeks ago. And I think we're at 331,000 subscribers as of today.
Wow. Congratulations. Okay, so for the first 2 years or 2.5 years, you had roughly, let's say, you got it to the point where you did 50, you had 1,500 subscribers. And then did you change? Because you were doing 2 videos a week. Are you doing a video a day now? Are you doing 3 videos a week?
So I would tell you, here's what I did. This is exactly what I did. So I was speaking about a lot of different things at that time. I think a lot of times people will have a show, or they'll do a radio or a podcast or YouTube or a blog, and they talk about everything. They want to talk about sports one day, politics one day, business one day. They want to talk about all these different topics. And one day I was with Michael Hyatt, and Michael Hyatt said, if you had one word to talk about, what would that one word be? So I came back and I got had a meeting with all the people that are pretty close to me, and I said, if you can think about one word that I can't stop talking about, what is it? And everybody said the word capitalism and entrepreneurship. I said, perfect, then that's what we're going to be doing. I'm going to use the word, I'm going to go out there and do whatever we can to create content specifically for the word entrepreneur. And then fast forward a year and a half later, if you type in the word entrepreneur on YouTube, no matter what computer you're on, I think 50% of the videos that have come up in the top 20 is all us.
Wow. Wow. Now, let's talk about the tools that you use. You have a really big, fancy studio. Talk about this.
Yeah, so YouTube to me is – social media is purely a part-time thing. I run a full-time financial services company that we started. I was a founder of it on October of 2009, and we started off with 66 insurance agents out of Northridge, California, and then now we're at 3,800 insurance agents in 49 states, and we write thousands of policies per month. So that's what I do full-time. But at the same time, it started off with a camera. It was an iPhone, and then from the iPhone, it grew to a nicer camera, and then it grew to a part-time editor who would edit a video a week for us for $100. Then it grew to 2 editors that were doing 2 a week for us, and then I hired my first full-timer, and then the second editor, and then the third editor, and now we have a team.
Wow. Wow. And you're still doing it where, at the office or at home or both or –
Yeah, currently, if we're doing, Monday, we have different episodes. On Monday, we'll do Motivation Monday. On Tuesday, Thursday, our current schedule, we'll do a how-to video. The how-to could be how to hire and fire people. It could be a how-to on how to work with family business. Like, how do you rate, all this stuff that has to do with how-to will be Tuesdays and Thursdays. Wednesday will be the vlog, and then Friday will be a case study done by my partner, Tom Ellsworth. Tom Ellsworth took Jamdad public back in 2004, and he sold Jamdad to EA Sports for $680 million. He was a former CEO of GoTV and the founder of Premier Digital Publishing that he sold to HarperCollins. He does Fridays, and he was a professor before at Pepperdine University. He knows business like the back of his hand. He has an MBA and very, very successful track record he's done. So he'll do business case studies on Fridays, and that's our schedule.
Wow, wow. And what's interesting, and I'm sorry, your partner's name again is?
Thomas Ellsworth.
What's interesting about Thomas Ellsworth is he's very unique because most academics don't have a track record of business. He's unique in that way.
Well, he did it the other way around. He first made his money, then he chose to be a teacher at Pepperdine, the other way around. So that's the kind of like go become a billionaire first, then go get your degree from Harvard.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. And you know, by the way, that's the best way to do it, right? Because at
no
that
doubt.
Point, you don't
no
want
doubt
to
about it. Yep. Yes.
You could be a high school dropout. Oh, you're a billionaire. Come on, we want you to teach at our college. Absolutely. All right. So you're a financial advisor, and so the question now is, that's great, David, but what does your YouTube channel have to do, you know, how is that helping you monetize or grow your financial advisor business?
I don't think that's the intention at this point. I think the intention for me long-term is to spread the spirit of capitalism around the world. That's what inspires me. I was born and raised in Iran. I lived in Iran for 10 years. I'm a revolution baby. I was born 3 months before the Shah was exiled and Khomeini came in. I was there when we got bombed on a few thousand times, and one day 167 times. I was living in Tehran, and we escaped 6 weeks after Khomeini died. And then I lived in Germany at a refugee camp for 2 years. Then I came to the States here, was in Glendale, California for 6 years, and then I joined the Army. Got out of the 101st Airborne Division Air Assault. I found out about capitalism, and the rest is history. And I want more people to experience that same spirit of capitalism that I have in my belly.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And are you still in California?
I moved to Dallas, Texas about a year ago.
Ah, okay. All right. Cool. Dallas, Texas. Yeah, I'm from Houston, Texas. And
okay.
Like you, I'm also a revolution baby. I'm from Cuba, and so we got out a couple of months after Castro took over, and you know it's one of those things that a lot of people I think simply don't understand that when you go through something like that, in a lot of ways it makes you stronger. It also makes you appreciate the freedoms that we have in regards to capitalism, entrepreneurship.
No doubt about it. I absolutely agree with you.
All right. Let's talk about this. When you are, thinking about entrepreneurs, if somebody was to say, David, you know, what are some of the mistakes that I should avoid or what are maybe some of the big mistakes that you see startups and entrepreneurs make on a regular basis, what would you say they are?
I think if it's initial, when they get started, they become business owners and they buy into this whole concept of, you know, I am my own boss, you know, I own my own business and it's I can do this, I can do whatever I want to do. You are not, when you go into business, you're not really your own boss. You are, you know, the boss is your 3,000 customers that you have. The boss is your 17 employees that have the choice to go to any other company. The boss is your investor that gave you the money. The boss is the audience that keeps listening to you. The boss is the market that's still receptive to your message. The boss is the, you know, other companies that decide to partner up with you and become vendors with you and team up with you. It takes many, 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 many years of leverage until you eventually become the boss. For the first 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years, everybody else is the boss to you. So I see a lot of guys that get started with a business, and all of a sudden they'll have some momentum, and they'll start making, you know, their $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 a month, and they have the lifestyle, and all of a sudden they're golfing 6 days a week, and then 18 months later they lose the momentum, wondering what happened. Was I affected by the market? Maybe the market affected me. Maybe it was this. No, you simply took the momentum for granted, and you lost it, and you thought momentum was going to be around forever. It's almost like having that one girl that every guy wants to be with, okay? And then you start dating that girl that you want to be with, and she says yes. You're shell-shocked. She says yes. You're on top of the world. You're, you know, thanking God for the prayers being answered. You're calling your mom and dad and she's taking a picture with them, and you're bragging about your friends that this is the girl that holds your hands and kisses you and goes home with you, and you bring her to these dinners, and she wears the dress, and she makes everybody says, oh, my gosh, I wish I was my girl. And then all of a sudden, you start realizing that, man, other girls are thinking I'm that good. Maybe I can have the other girls and this other girls, and then boom. Then you lose that girl, and she ends up getting married to a guy that knows how to handle momentum. And she gets her. He gets her, not
right.
You. So business and momentum, you can never, ever, ever take momentum for granted. You got to always be a little bit more paranoid than the other guy about momentum, because when momentum leaves, you're just another business owner that no one knows about.
Yes, yes. And again, I love the example of using the girl there, because for us guys, that's very relatable, right? I mean, when you are, And we've all seen this. You have somebody who is head over heels, and they finally connect with that person. And it's unfortunate. It's just human nature that now that I have this person, what else is out there, right? You start ignoring them. You start taking them for granted. And all of a sudden, the relationship fizzles out. The same thing for business. The same thing for money, right?
Oh, I mean, Bert, I'm speaking from experience. I'm not speaking from, you know, trying to tell. I've done it in business, and I've done it with multiple girls where I did that to, and then I lost the momentum. So that's why I think, you know, quite frankly, one of the things I constantly speak on is I am a big fan of seeing people fail miserably early on in life. I feel sorry for people who fail miserably in their 40s. I truly do. I love it when there's a heartbreak early on in life. I love it when there's a loss, a setback, a major setback, a major crisis early on, because the formula for people that have made history or have done something very, very big, one thing they all have in common is they had major, major crises early on, and they were able to overcome it, and that became their fire in their belly to realize, you know what, I'm going to go out there and do something big. And I'm going to cherish you because I know what it feels like to have everything taken away from you, and it ain't going to happen to me again.
Yes, yes. You know, we have a mutual friend, Grant Cardone, and one of the things that I love about Grant, and a lot of people don't get this, is that he understands that the minute he takes the pressure off, the minute he takes the eye off what he's doing, it could all disappear. He has no, you know, here's a guy who for those of you guys who do not know who Grant Cardone is, New York Times bestselling author. He has three or four companies. He's best known really for being a sales trainer, and then second for being in real estate. And he flies around in a private jet. And Grant has a lifestyle that most people would envy. But when you listen to him, you would think that he is barely scraping by, because he's always talking about, you know, doing more and just he has that momentum and he just doesn't stop.
That's true. That's a good mindset to have.
It's a great mindset to have, because I totally agree with what you're saying. Most of us have the opposite mindset, and that is, you know, when we get there, we start to take the pressure off, or as you said, the momentum off, and all of a sudden it just disappears, and we're scratching our heads going, man, what happened? I was on top of the world, and now I'm back to starting over again. And you know what? I think unless you have something in your life, that doesn't require you there. You know, again, you have online courses, you sell widgets, financial services has a recurring commission to it. You know, if you're heavily invested in real estate or you know, maybe some stocks that pay you a dividend, like Warren Buffett has a lot of those, then you know, I think that you can eventually get to the place where you will, you don't have to worry about it so much. But for, I think, 80% of most businesses, you know, it's never done. It's never 100% done.
Bert, how did you make your money? What did you do yourself?
Well, interestingly enough, the way I made my money is I put together a marketing deal for a company that was selling English as a second language, and they had a course, if you will, and I put together the marketing behind that program, and it paid me really, really well. And unfortunately, Patrick, I did not have somebody like you that I could maybe get mentored from. But I did exactly what you talked about is, you know, I'm making all this money. I don't even have to show up to work anymore because I get a commission off each sale. So life is great. And I am literally I took a month vacation with the family. We traveled a couple of different places here in America. Anyway, it quickly, you know, it all vanished. And what happened is the people who were putting together the online course, something I did not know about, they had licensed the material from another company. There was a dispute, and they had to shut down their program until they got the licensing figured out. And literally overnight, I went from doing $100,000 on a month to it was gone. And I had to start all over again. So at 28 years of age, I'm at top of the world. I've retired from corporate America. Life is good. But by the time I was 30, I was filing bankruptcy. That's how quickly it happened.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, I mean, bottom line, I'm just, you know, I'm also, unfortunately, talking from experience when I say that you're absolutely right. It can disappear quickly. You have to be aware of what you're doing, and you have to, you know, what do you call it? You got to be humble enough to say, okay, this could disappear tomorrow. What am I going to do? What intelligent thing am I going to do with this money? I mean, I could have invested in real estate. I could have invested in stocks. And I did some of that, but not to the extent that I could have done it. And instead, I pissed away a lot of money trying to be cool, trying to show off and living the lifestyle and all that other stuff because I thought I had made it. So it's anyway, very humbling to have that happen. But it keeps you sober. And let me tell you, I think about that all the time. So it's very helpful in teaching you pain. That kind of, you know, pain is a great teacher.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's especially the kind of pain that knocks you out and you get, you know, you have that moment by yourself where you're somewhat embarrassed and not want to come back and show your face. Those are the best ones.
Those are the best.
They really teach us to get up and show what our fight is all about. I think at that time, when that happens to us or to people, we really learn a lot about ourselves. Individually, I think at times like that is when a person is making a decision on who they're going to be the rest of their lives. Everyone's going to hit it. How they respond to that afterwards will tell the world about us and will tell us about us. So it's an interesting thing when it happens.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Patrick, I think that kind of what you said, we all must go there, right? We must all have that situation. I know that sometimes you look at you may look at an entrepreneur, you make a look at somebody successful, and you're looking at through their life and you're saying, well, you know, they didn't happen. That didn't happen to that person. I've heard many people bring up Elon Musk, that Elon Musk has not had a major setback like the ones that you and I are talking about, Patrick. First of all, Elon Musk is not done yet. And second of all, he's come close several times. When he was doing SpaceX, he was on the verge of bankruptcy. And the same thing with Tesla. I mean, on more than one occasion, he's been on the verge of bankruptcy. He has been stressed beyond compare. He's lost his relationship with his wife. He has suffered. And, you know, maybe he's smart enough not to have to lose it all before, to avoid some of that stuff. But again, the Elon Musk story is the exception, not the rule. And so he may never have a major, major setback. He may just have small ones here and there. But for the most of us, I think, we have to have that wake up call, unfortunately.
True.
All right, so Patrick, as a financial advisor, you sell insurance, it sounds like. What other services do you sell?
What I've sold in the past is stocks, bonds, mutual funds, money under management, the ETFs, insurance, variable side, index annuity, fixed annuity, variable annuity. I've sold a lot of different products.
Gotcha. All right, I want to talk about this a little bit more because we're going to short on time, and that is the YouTube channel. If you want to find out more about David and his team, you can go to Valuetainment. It's on YouTube, Valuetainment, and you can get to know Patrick. And I think I've called you David like 10 times, but anyway, it's Patrick Bet David, and Patrick Bet David and his team are on YouTube, and they can go to Valuetainment and check it out there, or you can do what I did, and you can just type in the word entrepreneur on YouTube, and he is, let's see, if you type in entrepreneur on YouTube, you get him on the second video, third video, fourth video. You'll see a big lion, red lion that says Valuetainment. That's his. 546 videos 546 videos. How long did it take you again to do 546 videos?
4 years and 4 months.
Wow. Okay. Well, 4 years, 4 months, 330,000 plus subscribers, Valuetainment. Patrick, Bette, David, I want to thank you so much for stopping by. I'd love to have you back again. And again, I apologize for getting your name kind of twisted there, but it's Patrick, Bette, David. And again, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing with us today.
Hey, thanks, Bert. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Okay. Good stuff there from Patrick, Bette, David. Not only about how to build a YouTube channel, 4 years, 4 months to get to over 300,000 plus subscribers. And again, he went from doing one video a week to two videos a week. Now him and his team are up to like four videos a week, right? He's got a couple of how to's. Then he has a case study in there with his partner. So it's a formula to follow if you want to get out there and do YouTube. Now, one of the things that I love about going to Valuetainment, because if you go to Valuetainment, again, it's on YouTube, you can see, what do you call it, his 546 videos, but you can see how they progress. He didn't become, you know, he didn't get tens of thousands of views overnight. He's been doing it for over 4 years now. And that's part of the strategy. You got to do it over time. If you want to, if you're going to do it right, it just takes time. There's no shortcuts. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for stopping by. As always, we're grateful for your listenership. We're grateful for you sharing our stories. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.